Hey there, it's Nikki Klosser, and I want to let you know about an awesome free giveaway for people on our email list. If you haven't already, click the link in our podcast description or go to theportraitsystem.com/signup to get on the list. If you sign up, you'll get a free Posing 101 PDF to jumpstart things. It's an epic PDF, so you'll definitely want to get this. Also, just by being in our email community, you'll get deals, sales, and information about any of our upcoming events and activities. So head over to theportraitsystem.com/signup and sign up today. You're listening to the Portrait System Podcast.
It's really helped me in my creative process to know that, okay, I'm creating this for a set of photographic judges and for other photographers who are looking at these competitions to be inspired by. So I think that's where I sort of started out to find my purpose with doing my creative projects.
Welcome to the Portrait System Podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Klosser, and this show is here to help you succeed in the world of photography and business, to help you learn to become financially free doing what you love and so much more. With over 1 million downloads, countless photographers have taken what they've learned from both our episodes and from theportraitsystem.com, and they have grown their businesses, quit their day jobs, and are designing a life of their dreams. We keep it real and share stories about the ups and downs that come with running a photography business. You'll hear real-life stories of how other photographers run their business, and you'll learn actionable steps that you can take to reach your own goals. Thank you so much for being here, and let's get started. Hi there, it's Nikki Klosser here, and this week my guest on the Portrait System Podcast is Hannah Nurett. Hannah is an incredible, highly awarded photographer, and she has won countless competitions. And what you might not know about her is she's not a photographer for a living. Hannah has a full-time job, and while she occasionally does shoot clients, she does most of her photography for creative purposes. Hannah talks about how she went from entering awards and not really winning much to taking the feedback she got and learning as much as she possibly could, which ultimately led her to winning a ton of awards. Hannah takes us through her creative process, including how she photographs children, and it was all so fascinating. Okay, let's get started with Hannah Nurett. Hi, Hannah. Welcome to the Portrait System. How are you?
Hi, Nikki. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. It's nice to chat with you. I got to see you in person and hug you on stage not too long ago, so that was fun.
That was fun, definitely.
Yep. For our listeners, we were at the Portrait Masters Conference, which is now part of WPPI, and we were doing the Portrait Masters Awards and Accreditation Ceremony, and Hannah was awarded three top category awards for, one was for pet, one was for family and group, and one was for creative.
Yeah, I was shocked. Yeah, it was amazing and something I truly did not expect the least. I mean, that was crazy. But so much fun. I was so happy, of course. And yeah, it's also really good fun to have that conference and actually being able to go up on stage and get to meet you and everyone else. And yeah, that was nice.
And you came all the way from Sweden.
I did. Yeah, it was my first time at WPPI. I've always wanted to try out the experience of being in, you know, the Las Vegas craziness. So yeah, it was fun.
Very cool. And now I know that you are not new to awards and winning things because you've been doing that for quite a while. But I want people to know before we get into all of that, that you are not a full-time photographer, that you have a 9-to-5, like other, quote unquote, other job. Yeah. Will you just tell people quickly what you do as well?
Sure. So I work as an IT consultant doing mostly project management. So big IT projects for big clients. That's my day job.
Okay. So what you do then for your full-time job does involve some sort of photography?
No.
Oh, I thought you said, okay, I just misheard you.
No. So it's IT project management. So it's nothing to do with photography whatsoever. No.
I thought you said IT portrait management.
Oh, no. Project. Sorry.
Oh, project. Okay.
Yeah. It's a Swedish accent. No.
All right. Sorry. I totally misheard you. Okay. So literally nothing to do with photography.
Nope. Nothing. No. It's completely different worlds. And I think it suits me quite well, actually. I like having that, you know. Mm-hmm. Having something to come home to, since my job can be quite demanding sometimes, and I do put in long hours every now and then, it's kind of nice to have photography as a completely different world. So I can really disconnect from work and let my brain go into photography mode instead. And I think that's really good for my mental health, actually.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in that. I think a lot of people do use their camera and their creativity just as a, you know, not so much as a moneymaker, but as an outlet mentally, yeah. Sometimes even physically, you know, just to do something different and work different parts of our brains.
Definitely. And I think that's, for me, is the biggest part of it. I do run a very small business as well. Like, I do shoot clients, but not very much. It's like a few sessions in the spring and a few sessions in the summer, and then that's it. So really, the most part of my photography is about the creativity and what I create for competitions mostly.
Right. That's kind of cool, because there is this pressure when you're shooting a lot of clients to, you know, when that's all you do, when you're only using your camera for your income and for your creativity, it can be tricky. Like, if I'm going to shoot, you know, for 10 years, I was doing 8 to 10 shoots a month. I didn't want to come home and pick up my camera and get creative.
Yeah, I get that. And I think for me, I think it would kill my creativity if I had to make my living as a photographer. I really, truly respect those who can do both. And of course, I know a lot of photographers who are amazing at running a business and super creative and creating all these amazing, you know, artworks. And I just don't know how they do it. I don't think it would work for me. I need the two sides of things, and I need to be able to keep photography as my passion, really.
Yeah. And I think I know a lot of people as well who do it for a living and who can get super creative for awards and competitions. And it just goes to show that there are so many different kind of facets of all of this and what works for different people. Like, there's the group of people who do it for a living and, you know, do competitions and awards and all of that. There's a group of people like you who maybe it's not for a living, but they do it for creativity. And then there's me, where, like, I've entered awards for sure. The Portrait Masters is the only awards I've ever entered. But for me, it's because I do so much camera work for a living, I don't want to do the creativity part of it for awards. So I think there's all these different categories of people, and it's just, you know, wherever you fit in, you can make it work however you want to do things.
Exactly. And I think for me, one aspect also is that it gives me less pressure to enter competitions because I don't do it for a living. I mean, I've heard so many people who have tried to enter awards, and photography is that profession, that when they may not do as well in competitions as they were hoping, they feel it's like a criticism to what they do for clients and their whole being as a photographer, which is such a shame, because for me, you know, shooting for clients and shooting for competitions, it's totally different things. Mm-hmm. Most of my client shoots were probably be, you know, in the low 70s. Some would even be below that, I'm sure. So it's really two very different audiences. Your clients who just want cute pictures of their kids and beautiful pictures of themselves, and then a photo competition judge who's looking at, you know, all these different technical aspects and lots of other things, you know. So it doesn't have to be, entering competition and getting a certain score may not say anything about how good you are as a professional photographer and how happy your clients are.
You just said that so perfectly, Hannah, and I'm glad you brought this up, because, you know, when we do enter, and if we don't get the score that we were hoping for, some people are like, okay, this just means, like, I need to do better, and where can I grow, and where can I learn? And some people take it so seriously and so personally that they're, like, devastated, and they think that they should, you know, that they shouldn't be a photographer, or that, you know, they get really mad. And I understand that, because it's not easy to see scores that aren't where you want them to be. I've gotten scores where I was like, oh, dang, that sucks. But ultimately, typical client work probably, unless you are, like, really, like, taking things above and beyond, or if you're in, like, the documentary category or whatever, you're probably not going to get silvers and golds unless you are truly shooting for that.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And of course, there are people who enter client work and score really high, but I would say that's probably exceptions rather than the rule, I think. But I think the point I was trying to make was that for me, I think it's good to disconnect those two and have competitions being something completely separate. But if I was a full-time photographer, I think it would be more difficult for me to not see it as a, you know, a rating of my ability as a photographer. Because I'm, as a person, I am ambitious and sort of performance driven. So I think I would probably struggle with my self-value a little bit. But right now, I don't have to do that because they're completely separate worlds to me. So I think just for my mental health, I think it's good that I'm not doing that for a living, you know.
I mean, like, what I care about most when I'm photographing clients is that the clients love the photos. And I could enter some of my client work into awards and, like you said, get 70, 71, maybe even 68, 69. But I don't really care because my clients loved it and they paid me good money for it. Yeah. And to me, that's the ultimate score, is if I see my client's face light up when we're doing their photo viewing, or if they're like, yep, I'll take the biggest package, I couldn't care less about awards. Yeah. But if I separately put together some sort of really dynamic, out-of-the-box shoot for me and entered it specifically into the awards and got like a 69 or 70 or 71, then I might be like, wah, wah, you know? So
yeah, that's it, isn't it? Yeah.
The intention behind it, I think, is important to think about. So.
For sure, for sure. And having said that, I mean, I am a much better photographer overall because I've started to enter competitions. I mean, I learned so much, and that is what really have pushed me to develop and get better. And my client photos are so much better now than they were just a few years ago. And that is largely because of competitions. And today, I know which client images are objectively good and which I send them anyway because I know that they will love them because their kid looked really cute in them. And even though the focus was maybe a little bit off, I also know that only another photographer would see that, right? Like only someone who's as much a nerd as I am about photography would know this. And these clients won't care. I mean, they just want cute pictures of their kids, right? So
before I ask you about, you know, how awards truly have helped you grow, I just want to say one more thing. It is important to have professional standard photos. I mean, you have to understand how to light your clients, whether it's in the sunlight outside or if it's in a studio with strobes. You know, you have to have some basic understanding of how to use your camera and understanding, you know, getting focus and, you know, all of those things, I think, in order to charge industry standard. Not that it needs to be mind-blowing. A lot of my work, I'm like, meh, it's average, you know, but I make a ton of money doing it. Because of the fact that it is professional, my clients love it, whatever. So I just want people to know, like, you do have to have some sort of skill in order to be a professional. And I think that that's where the accreditation part comes in. Because sometimes people aren't entering to try and get in the top 20. They just want to know, like, is my work professional standard or not? And it's good to get that feedback as well. So, but that's not to say if you get all 69s that you couldn't have a successful business. But it's just a matter of making sure that you know how to do the basics.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think, I mean, if most of my work, the majority of my work weren't up to professional standard, I don't think I would be successful at all. I mean, you have to have a good lowest level, so to speak, to work from. And then you can have the odd exception here and there. But definitely exactly. Agree with you 100%.
So how did awards help you? You said you grew a lot as a photographer. Like, you know, what was it that truly lifted you up to the next level?
I think for me, the biggest thing about competitions is that it gave me an audience for my creative work. Like the question when I started out, and I'm a complete Photoshop nerd. Like I love editing and I love doing composites and all of that. So I put a lot of work and a lot of hours into those images. And of course, if I do that, I also want someone to see them in the end when they're done. Mm-hmm. That makes sense, right? And like there are different ways to do that, right? You could go down like the exhibition route. That's not really for me. It's time consuming and quite expensive. You could build a big social media presence, which also doesn't really interest me that much. It takes too much time and I already use my phone way too much. So not really interested in that. But competitions for me was like the perfect outlet for, you know, what do I create all these images for? it's really helped me in my creative process to know that, okay, I'm creating this for a set of photographic judges and for other photographers who are looking at these competitions to be inspired by. So I think that's where I sort of started out to find my purpose with doing my creative projects. And then obviously I didn't enter the first time and won everything. So starting out, I think when you go into competitions, you have to have the mindset that you do it because you want to get the feedback and you want to learn and you want to grow.
Yes.
Not I'm doing this because I want to win. Because then the likelihood that you will be very disappointed is very, very high. You know, I'm not saying that it has to be like that, but for most of, I mean, very, even the people at the very top win everything, right? Everyone gets constructive feedback, even the best of the best.
Absolutely.
So you have to be in the, you have to have the mindset that you're in it to grow and learn. And that was definitely the case for me. Like, I didn't expect anything the first time I entered. I entered because people online started to contact me and send me messages and saying, hey, I've seen your images. I think you should enter competitions. I had no idea that photographic competitions even existed before that. But I thought, well, why not? Why not give it a go? And I really had zero expectations and, you know, no pressure whatsoever to do well. So I think that was a good starting point for me. And then I quickly realized just how good it was to get that feedback and just starting to look at my images with sort of competition rule glasses, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, what are the judges looking at when they see my image compared to what do I see when I look at my images? That's a big gap from the beginning. That was a really big gap. So for me, just starting to understand what photographic competitions is all about and breaking it down into this, the rules that they go by, that you go by when judging, and it's just really shifting my mind in the way that I look at images in general. And then the obvious next step is then starting to apply those learnings to my images. So, okay, so if I know that the judges look for storytelling, how can I start to incorporate more storytelling in my work? So for me, I mean, I come from a science background. And for me, I think it's a very scientific way of looking at a creative piece of work. You know, you're breaking it down into all these categories and rules, and you get a score with like a numeric value. It's something in that really speaks to my scientific brain, I think. It really works for me.
Do you remember any specific feedback that you got that really elevated you? Like, you know, was it the storytelling, or was it the retouching, or was the compositing maybe not where it needed to be, or was it the lighting? Like, do you remember?
Oh gosh, there's been so much. I think I've made most of the mistakes that everyone do, like overly smooth skin, for instance. Definitely feedback I've been getting.
That.
Yeah, flat lighting, murky shadows. Yeah, grayish shadows, too low saturation, and out of focus eyes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think I've had it all.
Okay, so that's kind of what I was getting at is, gosh, we all start somewhere, and there are so many different elements. And sometimes we, like you said, we don't see what the judges see or what other people see. And having other eyes on it is so important. I mean, for example, Richard Wood, I mean, he is just, you know, a totally like highly decorated, awarded photographer. And he, before he enters into the award, you know, he takes so much time. He turns it upside down. He gets other eyes on it. Mm. You know, no matter what level we're at, we have to continue getting feedback and getting other people to give us their opinions. And we can take those opinions and, you know, with a grain of salt, we can do whatever we want with those opinions. But it really is important.
It is. And I think it doesn't suit everyone, right? Like, competitions is not for everyone. I love entering competitions, but I would definitely never go out there and say that everyone should do this. Mm-hmm. Because you have to be the type of person that can handle feedback and want feedback and want to grow and learn. It may sound like a given thing that everyone does want to learn and grow, but that's not the case. Some people are super happy with just, you know, delivering professional standard and that's it. So I've seen a lot of people entering competitions and being so upset with the results, and again, taking it personal, taking it as a criticism of their ability to be a good photographer. And I think if you can't step out of that way of looking at it, then don't do it. Then competitions isn't for you. It's not for everyone. And that's fine. I think that's fine. But for those who are, then it's just the best way ever to really grow and learn and develop. And learning from people like Richard Wood, who's been like a super massive inspiration in my photography journey. His work is absolutely amazing. How would I have even found him, someone from the other side of the world, literally, if it wasn't for competitions? Probably not.
That's a great point. That's such a great point. Yeah.
And there are so many amazing photographers around the world that I'm inspired by, and a lot of them have become close friends now, and that's just amazing. So it's also the community side to competitions, actually. Yeah, it's given me a lot of friends and a big network, a big community across the globe, really, which I, again, would never have found if it wasn't for competitions. And we have this shared interest, this shared passion. We can be happy for each other and cheer each other on. And it's great when people you know and care about, when they win, I'm as happy for them as I am for myself, you know? So that's also, I just love that part as well, the community.
Yeah, it really is. It truly is amazing. When I went to New Zealand, I got to speak at the NZIPP. And part of, you know, their whole conference, they have this massive awards, you know, fancy ceremony. And gosh, I realized like the community is so strong, and they cheer, like exactly what you said, they cheer each other on. And it really is a cool place to be, you know, and again, NZIPP is amazing. Like there's now we have the Icon Awards with WPPI, which I know you won big at. We have the Portrait Masters. Like there are so many different communities out there. And I feel like they all start to overlap with each other. Like everyone starts to kind of enter them all and get to know each other. And it's really cool.
Isn't it amazing? I just love it. And I mean, we have the same in Sweden as well. We have the national Swedish competition every year. And that's just, it's just amazing. I've gotten so many friends through that. And we're like a big group of friends who are just really genuinely happy for each other. And, you know, just getting to meet up and geek out with other photographers through, you know, a whole weekend or week or whatever. It's just fantastic. And also I started to go to London for the societies in the UK have a yearly print competition as well, which is fantastic and also a great place to hang out. And yeah, I just met so many wonderful, wonderful people there. So it's fantastic.
That's awesome. Now, for people who are thinking like, okay, I keep entering, I'm not like, I still haven't gotten that silver or that gold or, you know, what do you think in your images takes you to those high scores? No pressure.
but I think I'm sort of fairly aware of my strengths and my weaknesses at this point in giving the number of feedbacks I've gotten through the years. And my strengths are storytelling, definitely. That's my biggest one. And then I'm also, again, back to being a complete Photoshop nerd. Like I'm good at Photoshop and I do a lot of composite work. Even a lot of my images who don't look like they're composites are probably composites in one way or another.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what about, I don't want people to think that you have to know everything about Photoshop and be a complete expert in order to enter or, you know, to get high scores. I mean, I'm not a Photoshop nerd. I'm not. Like, I know how to use Photoshop, the elements that I need, but I probably only use like 10% of what Photoshop is capable of. And I've managed to get 5 silvers. So,
yeah,
you know, you don't have to. And there's also like with the documentary category, we don't want highly Photoshopped composited images in the documentary category. You know, there are different, like you said, you have your strengths and you've got what you do and you love the Photoshop aspect, but I don't want people to scare people away thinking
our
champion this round, the first round of 2024 for the Portrait Masters, it was not composite whatsoever. Mitzi Starkweather won that one. It was a self-portrait. It was black and white. It was very raw. I don't think there was very minimal retouching.
I love that image.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, beautiful. And such a storytelling image as well. Like the storytelling nerd in me really loved that. It was amazing.
Yeah. So there's a place for all of it, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there's a place for all of it. And, I'm smiling because I'm looking at your family and group portrait where you won the category this time. And it's just, these two kiddos and they're in like a trunk and there's a kitty next to them looking out, peeking out, and they're smiling. And then your creative portrait, it's sort of like a take on the genie in the bottle. And it's clearly composited because the guy only has half a body and he's, smoke coming out of the bottle and that sort of thing. But when I look at these two images, they're very different.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, do you come straight out with an idea or do you just, take a shot straight out of camera and then take it into Photoshop and start playing with it? Like, what's your process?
I have a very, very, very long list of ideas on my phone, just in the notes app on my phone that I constantly add to. And it's very rare that I have an idea and then just go straight to shooting and then into Photoshop. Usually I let those ideas stir for months, sometimes years, but mostly months before I pick them up and do anything with it. And my ideas usually tend to evolve quite a bit during that time. So if I have like a base idea, then I might change it a little bit along the way and think about how can I make this story even stronger? Could I add something? Could I remove something? Should I have a woman or should it be a man instead? Should it be an old person instead? Would that enhance the story or whatever concept I want to convey? So it's usually not a very quick process. And it does take some time. And then I start by shooting all the elements. So if I know I want to make a composite, I mean, not all of my work is composite, but a lot of it. So then I shoot all the elements and then I try and bring it into Photoshop as quickly as possible and just make a really rough draft. So just mask out all the elements like really quick and dirty just to make sure that it works together. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then I either reshoot or just scrap that idea. But yeah, I think I've gotten to a point where I can sort of see beforehand if it's going to work or not. And it isn't until I've sort of validated my idea in a rough draft that I actually start the real work and do the detailed editing and make everything blend and so on.
Yes. Hey, just a quick break to tell you that since you're here listening, you have access to a really great offer. For our listeners only, we have a special promo code you can use to get 50% off the cost of membership. Just go to theportraitsystem.com or click the link in the description and use the promo code podcast50 to get 50% off of a membership. We rarely discount membership, so this is a big deal. As I hope you already know, the membership is how I and so many guests on this podcast reached our success, and it gives you access to countless amazing videos, an awesome community, and all the tools you need to build a massively successful business. So use the code podcast50 now to join the community and to start building the business of your dreams. I'll see you there. So, I mean, a lot goes into this. It isn't just, I'm going to just get a piece of fabric and throw it over the backdrop and take a shot of someone. Conceptually, it seems like there really is a lot that goes into this.
Mm. And I think for me, that is where my passion is. I love that ideation process. I love working with the ideas. I love the whole process that leads up to the final result. And if you don't do that, like if you're a documentary photographer, maybe I could never shoot documentary because just sitting around and waiting for something to happen. And I know that's not the
there's
case.
An art in
I know
that.
There's an art in that, definitely. Yeah. Seeing those situations before they occur. And I mean, I love documentary photography and I'm so in awe of those who can do it. But for me, that would take away the fun part, which is sort of coming up with this idea that I can plan down to the very last detail, and I can sort of build that image in my head before it actually happens and being quite meticulous and detailed about it. Like there's nothing unexpected or unplanned in my images. Everything is there for a reason. And that for me is what I really enjoy. I like that. Not everyone is like that, but I really do love that process.
Yeah. Okay, so I noticed that you photograph a lot of children.
Yeah.
And I mean, not all children, but children seem to be a big part of your portfolio and what you do. And I feel like that kind of brings in another tricky element, because if you're listening, if you ever have photographed children, especially young children, it is not always easy. I mean, I don't know. Easy for you?
No. And I mean, my whole photography journey really started when I had my oldest son. And like so many other moms, that's when I realized that I had a high motivation to learn how to use a camera, right? Because I want to document my kids. So I sort of started out with having a child that I wanted to take pictures of. And then I got hooked and really started to learn more, like how to use my camera, how to work with light, how to use a studio, and so on and so forth. One of the things I did early on was to force all my friends who had young kids to come to my place and let me practice on them, like the families and the kids. So that's really where I started to photograph a lot of young kids. And I guess that taught me a trick or two on how to work with them as well. And for me, photographing kids, there's a really... I've heard really experienced photographers say that, oh, I hate working with kids. They never do as they're told, and it's always a mess in the studio, and why can't they just listen to their parents, you know, or me? For me, that's the wrong mindset.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you work with kids, you have to realize that they did not choose to be there. Like, no three-year-old ever said, hey, mom and dad, I want to do a photo shoot, right? Didn't come from
Very
them.
Very good point.
Yes. They did not choose to be there. They are more or less forced to be there. And you have to remember that. I think you have to respect that. That it's my job, but as a photographer, to make it a fun experience for them so that they want to be there, so that they want to look at in front of the camera. Because you can never tell a kid to smile. Like, you can when they get over a certain age, of course, but young ones, no. You have to make it genuine. You have to play with them. You have to challenge them, and you have to let them run around. So These days, I only photograph kids for clients outdoors, because then we have a lot more space to run around and I can sort of let them dictate the rules. And then when I do my own creative work, then obviously we're in my studio. But also there, I have to really be mentally prepared. I have to have a few tricks up my sleeve for how to make them cooperate. And most of the time it works if you can only get into that place where you come from, you know, playing with them rather than telling them what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you hit some really great points there. One, they didn't ask to do this. Two, well, usually they don't ask to do this.
No.
Two, I mean, kids are kids and we have to let them be kids. Yeah. We can't expect, and parents too, you know, parents aren't always, we're always doing the best we can. And I mean, I have days where I'll take my kids somewhere and they are perfect angels. And then the next day I could take them to the same place and they're like wild animals. Yep. You know, I think we have to give parents some grace too. And yep. We have to be the ones who are in charge with tricks up our sleeve. Like when we were doing our own family photo shoot, Natalie Brianna, she's amazing here in Michigan. Well, I think she travels too, but she was like, okay, don't kill me for this, but can I play a poop song for your kid? And I was like, yes. Because at the time my kids were 4 and 6 years old. And that, oh my gosh, she got them laughing so hard and got the coolest photos. And you know, she took control. It was on her. It's her job to be, yes, I need to be as a parent, making sure that I am, you know, obviously there are certain things we do as a parent that our photographer is not going to do for us. But, you know, her having these tricks up her sleeve made our shoot a million times better.
Yeah. And it's about educating the parents beforehand as well. Because the times where I've had a challenge in my photo sessions, it's never because of the kids, it's always because of the parents, because they are so stressed out and they want their kids to behave like little angels. And then when they don't, the parents get even more stressed and they start to yell at their kids. And I'm like, no, this is going in the wrong direction. So I have to tell them beforehand to, you know, let me take charge. Don't worry. This will be good if you just let me, you know, do my job. You just stay happy. And whatever happens, don't be mad at your kids. Then we're good.
I love that. Another thing I do too, when I was photographing kids before, or you know, on occasion I still do for like friends and family or whatever, is I'll be like, okay, we need some bribery. Like, what is something that they're gonna, you know, earn as a reward after this? Or, you know, for really little ones, like, do you have some snacks maybe that aren't gonna make a huge mess, but you know, some snacks or just some their favorite toy or just something you know, that either the parents can bring or that I can have prepared, you know, just to have these extra little steps, I think is going to make the shoot go so much more smoothly.
Yeah. I always let the parents bring the snacks because they know what the kids like. So I never bring the snacks, but it's important to have them, definitely. And the younger the kids, the more important the snacks get, right?
Yeah. So it's like once you do get that great shot of these kiddos, then it's like then you're going to work in Photoshop. Like, what's your next step?
The shoots I do for clients with families and kids, those are very rarely heavily edited. They are very lightly edited. Like, I remove boogers and dirt and, you know, the normal stuff when you shoot kids. So very little editing, and most of that happens in Lightroom. But for my creative shoots, then the next step is to bring it all into Photoshop and again make that rough draft to see that it all works. And once I know that, then I go into the details, like do like skin retouch and add shadows if it's a composite to make it blend. And I work with colors and I work with the composition and all of those things. So it's usually quite a long process, quite a lot of hours that go into that. And I also live by the rule that I'm never finished with an image until I've let it go for a few days and not looked at it at all, and then come back, because that's when you see all the mistakes, right? So you need to step away from it and come back. And usually I do that multiple times. So one of those images can take weeks, sometimes months to complete.
Wow. Yeah.
So my most successful image in the Portrait Masters Awards ever, which I got a gold for, is a family tree. It's a composite of a family tree. And that image took me, I think, a year from idea to finished piece.
Wow.
Because that's an image that I really, first of all, there was a lot of elements that went into that. I think it's like 12 different people or something in that shot, plus a drawing of a tree that I had to make, and then making it all come together. But the biggest challenge was really making it blend in the end. Like, what's the finish I want in this image? It took so many tries and I almost gave up so many times. I did get some encouragement from a fellow photographer. So back to what you said about how important it is to get other second pair of eyes to look at your images. Sometimes you really need that. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the extreme case, you know, where it literally took a year to finish that. And that's, of course, not the case with every image. Then I would have given up a long time ago. But I would say that few of my competition work takes less than 2-3 days of full-time work to complete.
Wow.
There's a lot of work that goes into that.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I was going to ask you was about those different elements. So everything that goes into your work, you know, for competitions or whatever, are you photographing these elements separately? Are you, you know, coming up with them somehow in Photoshop? You know, what is those extra element? What's that process?
Yeah, so I shoot everything myself. That's the rule in most competitions, that it has to be your own work. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't use stock images or AI or whatever. So I shoot everything. So if I take an example, the Genie in a Bottle, which won the creative portrait category in the last round of the Portrait Masters. So that consists of one portrait of the guy. This is funny. I have a teeny tiny studio with really low ceiling height, and he's quite a tall guy. So he literally had to stand on his knees, like on my studio, for the lighting to get correct. So, the source image doesn't look anything like the final piece. But anyway, so that's one image. And then there's a beer bottle lying on the ground. So that bottle is one image. Then I have the ground. I think I shot that separately as well, because the beer bottle is just sitting on my studio floor, which is wooden, and I didn't want that. So that's a third image. And then I have the smoke, which is like, I don't know, 20 different images of smoke that I've taken and just combined. And I can't remember if there's anything else. No, that's probably it, I think. So yeah, there could be a lot of different images that goes into creating like one final piece.
Yeah. Where did you learn most of your Photoshop, you know, how to composite and how to, you know, just put everything together? What was your main source of learning?
Lots and lots and lots of YouTube tutorials, I would say. So I started to do that when I commuted to work, like on the train, on the bus. That was a really good way to, you know, just pass the time, just go on and look at all these clips on YouTube. But then as I got a little bit more advanced, I started to also buy courses from like renowned photographers. I think I have two of Richard Woods, for instance. I mean, he's a great mm-hmm. teacher, so I learned a lot from him and some other photographers as well, like from all over the globe, just people I admired whose work is really, really good in the composites department. So yeah, a little bit here and a little bit there, but I think having both of those sites was good. Like on YouTube, you can learn the tools in Photoshop. What you don't get through YouTube mostly is like the whole process and the workflow, because they tend to be shorter clips, just focusing on like a recipe for how you do this particular thing. So what I got from actually buying courses from other photographers is a more holistic view of how they create. Mm, yeah, so their whole definitely. Workflow, you know, how they shoot the source images to final piece. So I think both of those things were really good.
Yeah, yeah. There is so much great content out there. Like you said, Richard Wood is incredible. There's even in the Portrait System and in the Portrait Master Store, in the membership, the Portrait System, there's so much great, great content. And then in the Portrait Master Store, there's lots of courses, like you said, YouTube. It's pretty awesome these days, the information that's at our fingertips. And for even, sure. even yep. like if I'm in Photoshop and I'm like, oh God, how do I do this? You know, whatever I'm looking for, I will just Google how to blah, blah, blah in Photoshop. And I'm always going to find an answer. Yeah, so it's pretty amazing exactly. that. But like you said, having that holistic kind of start to finish, it's so great to have a course.
Yeah, definitely. And there's so much out there, like you say. But you also have to remember that, you know, you have to get things right in camera as well, right? Like if my source images are not lit properly, then...
Right.
Yeah, crap in, crap out is a common saying in Sweden, right? If what you put in isn't good, then what you get out is not going to be good either, right? So, I mean, you have to also know how to use your camera. You have to know lighting. You have to know all those mm-hmm. things in order. Even if you want to focus on composites, then definitely there's a whole base to being a good photographer that you really have to nail down first.
Yeah. Hannah, real quick, I want to talk about your lighting, because I was looking through your Instagram and there's one that jumped out at me. It's the thief, you call it. It's a child in a black knit cap and black sweater and gloves. And I just like the color tones and the light. It's just so beautiful. And like the face almost looks a tiny bit dirty, like how a thief might look, you know, after they've stolen the big diamond that she, you know, holding whatever. So, I mean, how do you light most of your portraits in studio?
I tend to stick to a very simple lighting setup. One big parabolic softbox is the favorite right now. Coming from the upper camera right is probably what I use in you know, 90% of the cases. And I have a really small studio with white walls, so the light tend to bounce a lot by itself. Sometimes I use a reflector, but sometimes I don't even need to. So it's really a super simple light setup. I can't remember for that particular image if there was anything special. Like I have a beauty dish as well, which I've started to experiment with. And I have an umbrella, but most of the time it's just a big soft box, really. One light setup. Sometimes a light on the background as well, but not always.
Is there anything else that you, like, either when you're shooting or... when you're editing or like certain tools, you know how there's like different actions or, you know, reflect. Okay. So when you're shooting, obviously like reflector, I know you have your lights, but is there a specific backdrop that you love or, you know, like what are the elements that you physically use to shoot? And then also, are there any specific tools within Photoshop that you just can't live without?
I would say that my vintage props are the most important things when I create. So I love this vintage look to my images. Very few of my pieces have a modern look to them. So I have these recurring items like a flat cap, like a brown vintage looking flat cap. I have one in child sizes and one for adults, and I use them a lot. Like some people have even said that, like, I knew the moment that image came up that it was yours because of the cap. So I realized I probably overused it a bit. But no, well, I just love that. Okay. I mean. So yeah, more than the technical equipment, I think really that kind of vintage setup really gets me passionate about what I'm creating. I love going to thrift stores and finding, like, I have this old typewriter, I have this old telephone, things like that. So lots of vintage looking stuff and clothes as well, obviously.
Well, and I think that, at least just from what you're saying, is so much of this is finding your own style and finding what you really love. Like, you are drawn to the vintage kind of style. You know, some people are super drawn to fashion. Some people are like, I want to be outdoors all the time. And, you know, it's like, I feel like that's half the battle, is figuring out what you love and your style.
And deep dive into that. I mean, I won quite a few awards now, but that is not because I am a master at lighting. I'm definitely not. I don't know many advanced lighting setups. I really have a lot of growth potential in that area. And I'm also really bad at posing. Like, I couldn't do even basic posing sometimes. I struggle with when it's adults. So I'm really not good at those things. Because I'm also not that interested in you know, beauty posing, for instance. I have all respect for people who do and lovely images, but it's not really something that I'm passionate about. So I haven't really bothered to learn, which I probably want to at some point. But still, I have really focused on the areas of what I create, which I am most passionate about, which is, you know, storytelling. I love images which aren't necessarily post, it doesn't have that, you know, beauty post feeling. That's more like a captured moment in time, like the kids and the cat looking out of the trunk, you know. So that's my passion. So I've sort of built on my strengths, I think, and really spent most of my time there. I mean, of course, I want to continue to grow, right? So my biggest ambition now is to get better at lighting and be more creative with my light setups. So we'll see. Maybe in a year or two, I can feel a bit more confident in that area as well.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, is that you do get to learn more and grow all the time. And it's just so cool. Yeah. You know, it'll be really fun to see where you go from here with, you know, trying out new lighting and new elements and new things. And
I think it's so important to find your own motivators as well. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you doing this? And for me, it's never been about money. That, of course, super important if you're dependent on photography as your income, then of course you need to earn good money. But because I don't need to pay my bills with this, I think it's also allowed me to not focus so much on the business side of things. I do have a business and it's doing fine, but I mean, I try to tend to want to spend as much time as I can doing what actually keeps me photographing, you know, what am I passionate about. And I have the privilege of being able to do that because I'm not dependent on the money flowing in. So that, of course, gave me a lot more creative freedom because I am in that situation. So I think it's just important to find your own, what's important to you, right? What's your motivation in this?
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, that it is a good point because it's hard sometimes to balance it all and manage it all, whether you are a full-time photographer, if you have a different job, if you have, you know, lots of children or no children, but, you know, tons of other activities or family or, you know, just so many different elements that come into play when we're trying to manage and juggle this all. And I think it's really important to remember to, like, find the joy in it all. You know,
absolutely.
It's, it can become overwhelming doing it all.
For sure. And I mean, none of us are 100% inspired all of the time, right? We're all tired sometimes and sick of it all. So I think it's also important to let yourself be less inspired. If you keep pushing yourself to be creative, then at some point you might hit a wall, right? So that's what I try to do. When I have periods in my life where I feel like maybe work is overwhelming or the kids are overwhelming, I put down my camera and I let it rest for a while. And of course, again, I'm super privileged to be in the situation where I can do that because I'm not depending on that as my income. But for me, just taking that pause from everything allows me to quite quickly find my creativity again when it's time, you know, when life allows it.
Yeah. Well, it has been really cool just, you know, seeing all of your work and just watching you win things and all the way from Sweden. It's pretty awesome.
Thank
Very
you.
Cool. I appreciate you sharing all of this with us. But I do have a couple questions that I always ask at the end of each episode. Mm-hmm. And the first one is, what is something you can't live without when you're doing a photo shoot? And I know you mentioned a couple things in there, but.
So when I do my family and kids shoots, I would say that like the eye tracking function was a game changer. When I it's standard in all the advanced cameras now, I'm sure. But when I bought my first camera that had, you know, really great eye tracking, that was fantastic. Like all of a sudden, nearly all of my images are in focus, which wasn't the case. And especially if you're working with young kids who can't sit still for, you know, even 2 seconds. They just run around.
What camera do you shoot with?
I have a Sony A7 III.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Mirrorless. So I really love it. It's not a super advanced camera at all. It's sort of one of those in-between models, in-between enthusiast and professional. But I'm really happy with it. Like, I really love it.
Fantastic. Very cool. All right. Number two is, how do you spend your time when you're not working?
Normally, my answer to that is photography, because, you know, obviously that's not my job. So that is what most of my time not being in the office is dedicated to. But then I have two kids, so obviously I try to hang out with them every now and then as well. No, but I mean, they are 8 and 6. So of course that they still take a lot of my time.
That's my kids are almost 6 and 8, so we're in the same boat.
Same. Yep. So I just, the whole, you know, life circus, right? With school, pick up and drop offs and activities and all of that. But also actually right now we have this big garden project happening at home. Like, we built a new patio and pretty much redoing our whole garden. And I've never been a garden person at all. But right now, like, a lot of my time is taking up like planting stuff and trying to figure out how to install lighting fixtures and just general garden planning. That's fun.
Yeah. I started a garden 2 years ago and I was just staring at it because I was never a garden person. I come from a family of green thumbs, but Hannah, it was just never my jam. And then we moved out in the country and I'm like, I need to grow food. And it's such a learning experience, but every year I get better and better at it. It's really fun.
Yeah. I've never been a garden person, never had that interest at all. But now when I've sort of read up and started to learn a little bit here and there, I'm actually starting to like it. So we'll see if it's something that's passing or if I'm actually going to like doing it going forward. We'll see. I'm aiming for something that's easy to manage going forward. We'll see.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Number three is, this is again, just about a photography product. Because when I would ask people what's something you can't live without when you do a photo shoot, a lot of times people would say something like music or my client's energy, or, you know, which is great, but I want to make sure we're hitting on like some photography specific products. So I know I kind of already asked you that, but let's do that if you have another product that you really love.
Good question. So outdoors, I love my Sigma 135mm lens. That's amazing.
Oh, nice.
I
just
love 135. It.
Okay.
It's beautiful. Cool. Yep.
I love a long lens.
Yeah, I do. And I wish I could use it in my studio, but it's teeny tiny, so that's not possible. But yeah, it's by far my favorite lens. I love it.
Fantastic. All right. And number four is, what would you tell people who are just starting out?
When you start to learn, people always talk about the importance of finding your own style. And I agree to that 100%, but I also think, don't stress it. You don't find your own style in a day. No one does. Mm-hmm. So I think it's super important to take your time and build your own style over time. So in the beginning, just try out different genres, try out different editing styles. Give yourself time to experiment creatively. Your client work, obviously you need to be super transparent to your clients what they can expect. But outside of that, be creative. Find people that you're inspired by and try to mimic their work. Like, I mean, obviously don't plagiarize, like don't copy something down to the last pixel and claim it as your own. That's not what I'm saying, but try to see if you can mimic their style, because then you will learn so much about how they light, how they shoot, how they style, you know?
Absolutely.
Like working with colors, like try the bright colors, the light and airy look, try the dark and moody, try the colorful look, try the muted look. I mean, try it out. And in the end, I think what will happen is that you'll find that you are drawn to certain things. Like for me, I'm definitely drawn to, you know, composite work is what I'm most passionate about. I'm drawn to a darker blue-green color scale. And this is not something that I knew from day one. It's something that I've learned over time, that I tend to gravitate towards that look. And if that happens enough times, then after a while, the penny drops and I realize, like, yeah, this is probably my style. This is what I want to do. But again, Rome wasn't built in a day, so don't stress it.
That's great advice for sure. Awesome. All right. Where can people find you online?
Instagram is definitely the place where the only social media that I actually keep updated. Hanna Nerik Photo, and photo is spelled in Swedish with an F, not PH. So yeah, just Google my name. I have a unique name, so you'll find me. You'll find me. I have a Facebook page as well. And yeah, it's probably less updated, but yeah, I'm there.
Fantastic. Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you again for all of this. This is absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Hanna. You take care.
Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you so much for listening to the Portrait System podcast. Your 5-star reviews really help us to continue what we do. So if you like listening, would you mind giving us a review wherever you listen? I also encourage you to head over to SueBriceEducation.com, where you can find all of the education you need to be a successful photographer. There are over 1,000 on-demand educational videos on things like posing, lighting, styling, retouching, shooting, marketing, sales, business, and self-value. There's also the 90-day startup challenge, plus so many downloads showing hundreds of different poses. We have to-do checklists for your business, lighting PDFs, I mean, truly everything to help make you a better photographer and to make you more money. Once again, that's SueBriceEducation.com.